We're reading about this last prayer. Sri Krishna Vrishni Kula Pushkara Joshadayan Shama Nirja Dvija Pashudari Bridikarin Udharma Sharvarahara Shiti Rakshasa Drug Akalpamarkam Arhan Bhagavan Namaste. Oh, my dear Krishna, you bestow happiness upon the lotus like Vrishni dynasty, and expand the great oceans consisting of the earth, the demigods, the brahmanas, and the cows. You dispel the dense darkness of irreligion and oppose the demons who have appeared on this earth. O Supreme Personality of Godhead, as long as the universe exists, as long as the sun shines, I will offer my obeisances unto you. My dear Lord Krishna, your very name suggests that you are all attractive. The attraction of the sun and moon are all due to you. By the attraction of the sun, you are beautifying the very existence of the outer dynasty. With the attraction of the moon, you are enhancing the potency of the land, the demigods, the brahmanas, cows, and oceans. Because of your appearance, because of your supreme attraction, demons like Kansa and others are annihilated. Therefore is my deliberate conclusion that you are the only worshipable deity within the creation. Accept my humble obeisances until the annihilation of this material universe. As long as there is sunshine within this material world, kindly accept my humble obeisances. So now the prayers are over, and there's the conclusion here. Sri Shuku Vacha Itya Bishtuya Bhumanam Tri Pari Kramya Padayo Natva Bishtam Jagat Datta Swadhama Pratyapadyata. Shukadeva said, after offering his 40 prayers, Brahmastuti, to Lord Krishna, Purushottam Sri Krishna, Brahma circumambulated his worshipable Lord, the unlimited personality of Godhead, 3 times. Then he bowed down at his lotus feet, the appointed creator of the universe, and returned to his own residence. Purport. Although Lord Brahma had prayed to take birth as a blade of grass in Vrindavan or even the area surrounding Vrindavan, Lord Krishna, by his silent response to Brahma's 40 prayers, indicated that Brahma should return to his own abode. In other words, sometimes silence means agreement. There's a statement like that. So he was asking the Lord to grant him, he was asking Lord Krishna to grant him birth as a blade of grass, or at least in Vrindavan or somewhere outside of Vrindavan where devotees may walk on him. But Krishna was silent, but he didn't seem to accept that, nor did he fulfill it, because he had a few more years to live out of service. He was temple president, just started. Yeah, he was in his 50th year or something, 51st year. So there's another 49 years to be temple president of this universe. Can't just run away so soon. It's not so easy. Man proposes, God disposes. We may want to take birth in Vrindavan or near Vrindavan and migrate to Vrindavan, but it may take many lifetimes. Although Brahma had prayed to take birth as a blade of grass in Vrindavan, Krishna indicated, get lost. First, Brahma had to complete his personal devotional service of 49 years more of the universal creation. Then he could come to Vrindavan and get the mercy of the inhabitants there. In other words, the devotee should always be attentive to executing his personal devotional service properly. This is more important than trying to live in the Lord's abode. This is BBT commentary. So Govinda said, listen, go to your service first, and when I'm satisfied, then we'll see about coming to Vrindavan. So in Sartadarshini, you can see Vishnu Chakravarti, what he says about this verse. What was Brahma's desire? Because he commenting on the Sanskrit, it says, Abhishta. Rupa Goswami, he understood the Manabhishta, the inner, deepest heart's desire of Lord Chaitanya. It says, Abhishtuya. So Abhishta means this word. Abhishta means Brahma's desire. Actually, Brahma desired to attain Krishna Vrindavan, like any of us. However, he sent Brahma back to his own home in Brahmaloka, which is very dear to Brahma. Brahma is the creator of the universe, and if he suddenly abandons his post, the universe would not function properly. So Vishnu comments, what it was his desire? His desire was to live in Vrindavan, but Krishna, and he mentioned that to Krishna during his prayers. Krishna didn't reply to that. He said, better you to Brahmaloka and do your service. Brahma is the creator of the universe, and if he suddenly abandons his post and moves to Vrindavan, if the temple president just packed up and moved to Vrindavan. So he's a big temple president. Vedanta Sutra 3.3.14.33, it says, Yavad adhikaram avishtitir adhikarikarnam. Authority should fulfill the duties of their posts for as long as they are assigned. Thus it is understood that after fulfilling his responsibilities in the post of Brahma, Brahma would attain his desired goal of residence in Vrindavan. Prabhupada says that in this way, the master of the universe, Lord Brahma, offered humble and respectful obeisances unto the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And he circumambulated Krishna 3 times. And he was ready to return to his own abode, known as Brahmaloka, by his gesture, Krishna. I guess he said, chalo, or made some head movement. As soon as Brahma left, Lord Krishna immediately appeared as he had on the very day the cows and coward boys had vanished. So back to after that brief interlude with Brahma, which was a moment of Brahma's time, Krishna got back to the business at hand, eating, playing with his friends and telling jokes. Text 42, Tato anigyapya bhagavan sabhuvan sabhuvam prag avastitan vatsan pulinama ninye yata purva sakam sakam. After granting his son Brahma permission to leave, the Supreme Personality of Godhead took the calves, who were still where they had been a year earlier, and brought them to the riverbank, where he had been taking his meal and where his coward boyfriends were waiting for his return just as before. In this verse, the word anugyapya means that means giving permission. It's translated as giving permission, but the commentaries are saying, Jiva Goswami, that Lord Brahma didn't just leave on his own desire. This word of the verse, anugyapya, means that Krishna sent Brahma away after forgiving his offense as a father will forgive his overlooks and forgives the transgressions of his beloved son. That's why he used the word sabhuvam to his own son. It indicates Krishna forgave Brahma's offense and treated him with affection as a son. He's all right, you made offense, now go back to your post. And then in the future, your desire to live in Vrindavan will be fulfilled. The original coward boy friends and calves were situated exactly as they were before, a year earlier, near the bank of the Yamuna River, in the forest, respectfully. Previously, the calves had disappeared within the forest, and Lord Krishna had gone to search for them. Not finding them, the Lord had returned to the riverbank to discuss the situation with his coward boyfriends. When he got back, after not finding the calves, he couldn't find the boys either. The cows were once again in the forest, and the boyfriends were once again on the riverbank of the Yamuna, ready to take their lunch. According to Sanatana Goswami, the calves and boys remained in the forest and on the riverbank for 1 full year. Lord Brahma did not actually take them away to another place. By Krishna's omnipotent illusory energy, the gopis and other residents of Vrindavan did not notice that the calves and boys, nor did the calves and boys notice the passing of a year's time or feel any hunger, cold, or thirst. All this was part of the pastime arranged by the Lord's Yogamaya potency. Lord Brahma thought, I have kept all the boys and calves Gokul sleeping on the bed of my mystic potency. And to this very day they have not risen. A similar number of boys and calves have been playing with Krishna for one whole year, yet they are different from the ones illusioned by my mystic potency. Who are they? Where do they come from? Brahma's thinking. Nothing is invisible to the Supreme Lord Sri Krishna. Thus Krishna appeared to be searching for the calves and boys, only to enact the dramatic pastime of bewildering Brahma. After Brahma surrendered and offered his prayers, Krishna returned to the original boys and calves, who appeared exactly as before, although their size had somewhat increased because of one year's growth. According to Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, since Krishna was playing exactly like an innocent young coward boy in Vrindavan, after four-headed Brahma offered his prayers, the Lord maintained his role as a young coward boy and thus remained silent before Brahma. Krishna's silence indicates the following thoughts. So all this time, while Brahma was glorifying Krishna as Purushottam Bhagavan, Supreme Purushottam, Krishna was quiet, but people may be quiet, but it doesn't stop them from thinking. People are always, we're always thinking something. Past, present, future, whatever. So what was Krishna thinking? Now this takes a lot of perception that only someone of the caliber and stature of pure prema, Krishna prema, as Vinod Valerie Mundry or Hari Vallabha Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur can have entrance into the mind of the Lord. Because of the power of his love, he can have mana pravesh, enter the Lord's mind and understand what he's thinking. In this world there are certain, not very developed, but it's very preliminary mystic powers that people get. They can read the minds of others and tell them what they're thinking without asking them. So this happens even on a spiritual level. Radharani knows the thoughts of Krishna, and before he even expresses his will or desire, she acts accordingly to provide him whatever he wants, even before he knows what he wants. Even before he thinks about something, Radharani gives that substance to Krishna, or that makes that arrangement for his happiness. Some prasad or some seva or some water or fanning, whatever. This is a very, it means you know what someone thinks before they think it. That's really advanced. You know what someone's going to anticipate to think. You know what someone may feel before they even feel it. That's Radharani in her intimacy of absorption in Krishna's service and happiness. So Krishna was thinking while Brahma was speaking all this time, where did this four-headed Brahma come from? Because he's only a boy, Nara Lila. He's not thinking, I'm God, I know everything, I'm omniscient, I know past, present, future, I know who this is. He's just simply an amsha, one of my amshas. Where did this four-headed Brahma come from? What is he doing? What are all these Sanskrit words he keeps on speaking? I'm busy looking for my calves. I am just a coward boy, and I don't understand all this. So this is, Krishna was also bewildered by this bewildering pastime that he arranged to put Brahma and Vimo on. He's also appearing bewildered. Who is this crazy guy? And what's he saying? I don't know Sanskrit. I know Brijavasha. Lord Brahma had considered Krishna an ordinary coward boy and treated him like that. After accepting Brahma's prayers, Krishna continued to play as a coward boy and thus did not even answer the four-headed Brahma. Rather, Krishna was more interested in rejoining his coward boyfriends for the picnic lunch on the bank of the Yamuna River. Well, certainly, Sakyaras, Vishramba Sakyaras, with your intimate Subal and Sridham and Madhamangal, is much more pleasing than hearing a bunch of incomprehensible Sanskrit stutis from Lord Brahma. And what fun can you have with your grandfather? You can't do much with your grandfather. Big long, you can pull his beard and run away. But he's slow, and you can't wrestle your grandfather, and can't do much. So I'm going to go ahead to the skip ahead to your verse 60. This is about the Shruti fall of this chapter. Etsat saridibish charitam rarer agardanam shadvala jamanam cha vyaktetarad rupam ajarva bishtavam shinvan grinan eti naro kilartan. Shukadev says, any person who hears or chants these pastimes Lord Murari performed with his coward boyfriends, such as killing Agasura, taking lunch on the forest grass beside the Yamuna, Krishna's manifestation of transcendental forms, the Vishnumurtis before Brahma, and the Brahma Stuti, wonderful prayers offered by Brahma, he will surely achieve all his spiritual desires. Abhishta. Shrinvan Grinan, by hearing or chanting. Nara, any human, Akila Artan. Akila means everything, art, all worthwhile and valuable attainments, all desirable things one will attain by hearing these stavams, these prayers of Lord Brahma. And there's a purport. According to Srila Sanatana Goswami's Tika on verse 60 of chapter 14, one who is only inclined to hear and chant the pastimes of Krishna will achieve spiritual perfection. Well, that's interesting. Maybe you don't even come and hear or chant, but you're just inclined. I'm inclined, but I don't go to class. That's how powerful. Many devotees seriously engaged in propagating Krishna consciousness are often so busy that they cannot chant and hear the pastimes of the Lord to their full satisfaction. However, simply by their intense desire to always chant and hear about Lord Krishna, they will achieve spiritual perfection. Of course, as far as possible, one should actually vibrate these transcendental pastimes of the Lord. And this, let's see, Sarta Darshani, and what Vishnath is saying in regard to this verse 60, this is wrapping up the chapter. He says the words, he takes the words in this verse, there's particular words in the first line, Suridbish Charitam Rare, Suridibi Charitam. Surid means my very dear heartly friends. My heartly friends. Ridi means heart and Su means very dear. Dear to my heart. Intimate. My bosom buddies, as they say. The Charita means the life, the story, the activities. Krishna says these words, Surid bi Charitam. Krishna's pastimes with his intimate friends refers to those pastimes like this one described in Srimad Bhagavatam. Two chapters before, verse 5. Mushnanton yonya shikyadin gyatan arach chachikshupa tatyatyash chapunar durad dasantash chapunar dadu. All the coward boys used to steal one another's lunch bags. When a boy came to understand that his lunch bag had been taken away, the other boys would throw it farther away to a more distant place. And those standing there would throw it still farther. When the proprietor of the bag became disappointed, the other boys would laugh, and the proprietor would cry, and then the bag would be returned. Oh, don't cry, here's your lunch bag. We weren't going to eat it, we were just playing with you. Don't be a spoil sport. The word in the verse, vyaktetarad, means soup. Supra mundane or transcendental. Lord Brahma, his elaborate offering of prayers. Anyone who hears or chants Brahma's comprehensive prayers or stutis about Krishna's transcendental form, Krishna's playing with the coward boys, Krishna's killing of Agasura, Krishna's eating with his coward boyfriends in the forest covered with lush grass, I'll have all his desires fulfilled. This is the last verse of the chapter, 61. Chapter 1 through 14 is Bali Lila, Krishna's birth until 5. chapter 15 until I think the beginning of 21 or so. Chapter 21 is Krishna's Pogunda Leela, 6 to 10. And then from 10 years old to 15, 16 is Krishna's Kaishar Leela, which begins with chapter 21, Venugita, which is the gopis' Purva Rag. They're falling in love with Krishna, as you know, the song of the flute. And they're glorifying the flute and Krishna. So this is kind of a juncture. This is how we understand it. Gopastami, of course, is in Pogunda Leela. When he turns 6, he takes out the cows. And that's in Shatikara. So this last verse here of this 14th chapter, as we heard just now in verse 60, is anyone hears these pastimes of Krishna, and they mentioned them, killing Agasura. So now this verse mentions more of these pastimes. It's kind of a summary of more of Krishna's Bali Leela, text 61. Evam vihare komare. This is Krishna Kumara Bihara. Bihari means enjoyments or pastimes. Evam vihare komare komaram jahatur braje. Nilayane setu bandher markatot plavanadibi. And here Shukadeva Goswami is mentioning some of those pastimes of Krishna's Kumara Leela, Bali Leela. And his summary. In this way, Krishna's boyfriends spent their childhood. In other words, Kumar means his childhood. You can say babyhood or childhood. You can say child, then child and young boy, then youth. Youth is 10 to 16. And Pogunda is boyhood. Boyhood pastimes is Pogunda. Child, Shishu. Shishu Kumar. Shishu means child. You become no longer a child. When you're 6 years old, you're a boy. And from 6 to 10, you're a boy. Then after 10, you're a youth, a young man. And this way, the boys spent their childhood from birth to the age of 5 in the land of Vrindavan, playing hide-and-seek, luka-luki, building play bridges, and jumping about like monkeys, and engaging in many other such games. So the word there is Setu Bande. This Krishna's Kumara Leela ends at chapter 14, and Shukadeva is reviewing all these Bali or Kumara Leelas that are mentioned here in a summary way to wind up his Bali Leela or his childhood pastimes, purported in BBT. The word nilane refers to games such as hide-and-seek or cops and robbers. Sometimes cops and robbers. Sometimes the boys would jump around like the monkeys in the Lord Ramachandra's army and then enact the building of the bridge to Sri Lanka by constructing play bridges in lakes or ponds. Sometimes the boys would imitate the pastime of churning the ocean of milk, and sometimes they would play catch with balls like of Amalaki and Baal. We can find full pleasure in the spiritual world with the simple condition that everything should be performed in pure love of Godhead, Krishna consciousness. So we have to give up the consciousness of exploitation and selfishness and develop the consciousness of love and dedication. Then we can enjoy the pure fun and find full pleasure in the spiritual world. So this term is used in the verse Setu Bandha. In some of the tikkas, they explain this building bridges, playing bridges, which means the coward boys, they would stop the water flowing somewhere with mud and tree branches and leaves and other objects, something like a beaver. When beavers get together, they make a little dam in a river of course, they chop down trees with their teeth. Their teeth are like hatchets. I saw the cha-cha-cha, and the tree goes, and it falls across, and they dam it up, and they make some kind of house over there, and that kind of lagoon over there, whatever, Kaliya god. So then the boys would do like that. They put an old tree across the river and some mud and leaves and jam it all up. This way they make bridges, or what we call dams. And sometimes to please his childhood friends who desired to see the construction of a bridge by Sri Raghunath, Lord Ram, then Krishna, Shishukumar, Nandanandan, he would construct a bridge in the middle of a lake with the coward boys playing the roles of monkeys, just like in Ram Leela during Treta Yuga. Where's this? And this one tika we have here says this pastime with the boys took place somewhere near Mathura, behind the Janmasthan. But I haven't seen that place mentioned in any guidebooks anywhere. But the Krishna seemed to like this, enacting these pastimes of different avatars, irregardless of his age. Sometimes he would take the role of Vishnu in Chatikar Leela, the boys in Pogunda Leela, when Krishna is 6 or 7. The boys said, "Oh, I heard you ride around in Garuda." So Sridham, one of Sridham's expansions is Garuda. So then Krishna looked towards Sridham and said, "Oh, Sridham, the boys want to see me as Vishnu riding around in Garuda. All right, let's go. I'm on. Do it." So then he climbed on his shoulders. Then Sridham turned into Garuda and took off. Zip. No runway. This kind of airplanes that take off with no runway. Vertical takeoff, VTO. VTO coward boy. VTOCB, vertical takeoff, coward boy. And they just took off in the air, and then Krishna assumed his eight-arm form of Vishnu or whatever. And they were flying all around and diving on the top of the boys, like strafing the boys and going up in the air and then rolling over and like blue angels or some special hi-fi Air Force pilots doing an air show. So Krishna and Sridham, as Vishnu and Garuda, were doing an air show, or the coward boys, and soaring and diving and cutting the engines and sinking and all these things they do in the airplanes. So the boys were clapping, "Oh, this is very wonderful." And then they came back, and then that was that. No one thought that Krishna's God, or that was amazing. how did you do that? We just thought, well, you know, we asked you to show this, and you did, and that was that. Now but don't think you're very big, because I just beat you up yesterday in wrestling, and I'll beat you up now too. So Subal pinned Krishna on the ground the next minute. This pastime is commemorated in Garuda Govinda Temple, which is nearby Chatikar, right across Chatikar Road, behind the gas station there, down a little alley, our little road there. A beautiful black deity of Krishna, and underneath his dress there's deity of Garuda that he's standing on. Guru Govinda. I have seen in Kamyavan, it's even mentioned on the road sign, Setu Bandha, this way, which is near Brinda Devi Mandir, around the back a little bit to the side there, a kilometer or two over in the fields. And there's a Setu Bandha. Setu means bridge, and Bandha means to build or to establish. And once in Kaishora Leela, Krishna was there with the gopis, and they said, "Oh, we've heard from Bhagari Rishi and Dravasa and Garga Rishi, they read sometimes ancient histories, and they say that in previous age, Treta Yuga, you were Ram, and you had a form as Ram, and you got some monkeys and built a bridge. So we want to read about that, and it's quite an amazing place. Have you seen Setu Bandha? I read about it, and finally we made a point to see it, one yatra to Kamyavan, and it's quite convincing, because it's a very flat area there, the whole area, Braj is pretty flat. Of course, in Kamyavan's side, there are some small hillocks here and there, but Adi Bajrinath, Adi Kedarnath, Barsana, and underground, there are small hills here and there. But there, it's all very flat area, that particular part of the desert bordering Rajasthan and UP, which is joining there in Kamyavan. And batteries okay. When you go there, it's quite flat in the fields, and you're looking, and we found some temple there with some trees and we went there, and we said, where's this place? And some boy, little coward boy, was kind of blue in color and peacock feather in his hair. No, some local, he was brown, not blue, but anyway. And he had a gumshoe around his head, not a peacock feather. But he took us there, our group, about 10 devotees, and he took us in the fields, and he showed us, he says, here is Ram's Bridge. And right there was about 6 feet wide, like a roadbed of just all different boulders, big boulders, gray, as if they were from a riverbed. They were all polished and kind of roundish and polished as if they were on a river. And they went for a long way, about 300, 400 meters, like a roadway, about 8 feet wide, and quite a few of them. And they went across the field, and they went up to some kind of high, small hillock there. And that pastime says that area was, some water was there, was some lake there, and the gopi said, oh, that's Lanka, can you make a bridge to Lanka, that rise, that high area. So on the order of the gopis, Krishna and Amud of Ram, he called all the monkeys, all these little friendly monkeys you see here in Vrindavan, to make a bridge here in Kamyavan. And there on the north side of this bridge, there's a temple, that's where he went. There's a deity of Shiva there, Rameshwar Mahadev, like South India. And he was installed by Krishna when Krishna assumed the mood of Ram. And that hillock that I mentioned, that's represents Lankapuri. One day, the very playful Krishna was sitting in the shade under the trees beside this lake. And the gopis were joking and laughing with Vinod and Radhika. And there were some monkeys descended from the trees nearby the lake. And they gathered around Krishna, attracted by his sweet beauty, as anyone would be. Because Krishna is all attractive, even monkeys. We also attract monkeys. But that's only if we're carrying a bag of fruit. And they steal the fruit and run away, they don't care anymore. But these monkeys, they gathered around Krishna's feet and they bowed down at his feet. They started singing and jumping around and dancing in great mirth. And several monkeys, they took very long leaps from the trees on the south side of the bank and they landed at his lotus feet and bounded across. Krishna praised them for their chivalry and bravery. Watching this amazing pastime of Krishna interacting with the Braj Vrindavan monkeys, the gopis were amazed and charmed. So then they started to describe, the gopis started to describe the astonishing pastimes of Ramchandra, and that they had heard that he also received the help of monkeys. And Lita said, listen, Shyam, we heard from the rishis that in Treta Yuga, the greatly powerful Hanuman, that great powerful monkey, crossed the ocean in one jump. And today we're seeing with our own eyes these monkeys jumping across this lake with a single jump. Krishna proudly declared to Lita, don't you know? I was that Ram in Treta Yuga. I performed all these pastimes as Ram. Alita praised the amazing pastimes of Ramachandra and said, she said, Ramachandra, he was Maryada Purushottam, he was so virtuous, and he performed such heroic pastimes. But you're a liar. Krishna, you're lying. You were never Ram. Such bravery is impossible for you. You simply hear some thunder and you jump and run for your cover behind your brother. Krishna smiled and replied, Lalita, you don't believe me? But it's true. I did take the form of Ram, and I married Sita after breaking the bow of Shiva in Janakpuri. With the bow in my hand, I submitted to the order of my father Dasarath. And with Sita and Lakshman, I roamed through Chitrakoot and Dandakaranya, where I killed cruel and tyrannical demons. I wandered from forest to forest in separation after Ravana kidnapped Sita. But then I destroyed Ravana and his city of Lankapuri with the assistance of the monkeys. Then I returned to Ayodhya. Now I carry a flute and roam from forest to forest, tending the cows, and perform pastimes with Radhika and the company of your gopis. Previously, when I came as Ram, my bow and arrow made the three worlds tremble. Now, however, all living beings, both moving and non-moving, are becoming maddened by the sweet sound of my Vamshi, Murali. Lalita said, smiling, mere words will not convince us. Big talk, all talk and no show. If you can show some valor and chivalry like that of Ram, then we might believe you. But all this boasting and imaginative statements, we hardly believe a word of what you said. Listen, Ramchandra arranged for a bridge to be constructed by bears and monkeys so that he crossed the ocean, which was 800 miles wide, with his entire army so he could attack the golden city of Lanka. If you can get these monkeys to construct a bridge over this small lake, then we can consider believing you, Krishna. Hearing Lalita's challenging words, Krishna called all the monkeys in a moment by sounding his flute. Toot! He then ordered them to construct a bridge over the lake using some flat stones. On Krishna's order, thousands of monkeys started jumping and screeching and leaping. Eagerly started to help build the bridge, bringing stones from distant places. Right before the eyes of the gopis, they watched Krishna construct the bridge with his own hands and the stones carried by the monkeys. Then, before starting, he installed a deity of Shiva, Rameshwar Mahadev, at the beginning of the bridge on the northern side. These places can be seen today in Kamyavan. This lake is also called Lanka Kund. Of course, that lake is a little dry these days, but at one time there was water there, Lanka Kund. As when you go to Adi Badrinath in Kamyavan, near Dig, there's Adi Badrinath and Adi Kedarnath, and behind Adi Badrinath, there's the Alakananda Ganga. And 80 or 100 years ago, the Ganga River used to flow down the hill there. You can see the riverbed flowing and going. But since 1987, when I first went there, I'd never seen any water there. The riverbed is there. But since the last 30 years, it's dried up like so many rivers. Beds all over India are bone dry. So this is one of the Krishna's pastimes. Of course, this is Kaishora Leela, not Boganda Leela. And Vishnath says in relation to this ending of the chapter and the end of Krishna's Balya Kumar Leela, Evam Vihare Kumare Komaram Chahatur Braje Nilayane Setu Bandera Markatot Plavanadibi. King Parikshit had asked the question, Brahman Kalantara Kritam Kat Kalinam Katam Bhavet. O great sage Shukadev, how could things done in the past have been described as being done in the present? Krishna performed the pastime of killing Agasura during his Kumar age. So how during his Poganda age, beginning from the age of 5, could the boys have described this incident as having happened recently? In these chapters, that question has been answered. Now Shukadeva Goswami continues his service of narrating Krishna's pastimes. Krishna and Balaram spent their childhood secretly, Jahatu, in Braj, playing hide-and-seek and enacting the pastimes of other incarnations, such as building the bridge to travel, journeying to Lanka, and churning the milk ocean. Iti sarartadarshinyam harshinyam bhakta-chetasam Chaturdasho Yamdashame Sangata Sangata Satam. As I, Vishnu Chakravarti, stay among Krishna's devotees, I have thus concluded this commentary in the 14th chapter of the 10th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, named Sarta Darshini, which pleases Krishna's devotees. Harsh Bhakta Chaitasam. Bhakta Chaitasam, the consciousness, the chitta, and the consciousness of the devotees becomes harsh. Doesn't mean harsh in English. Harsh means rough, harsh speech is a symptom of the demons. But harsh in Sanskrit means happy. We have in the Bhagavatam, 6th canto, the story of King Chitraketu, who had a son, remember? His son was named Harshashoka. Happiness and lamentation. He was happy to finally get a son from one of his queens. But when the other queens got envious and poisoned him, then he died. Then he lamented. What's predicted by Parvati Muni and Narada Muni. At any rate, this is material life, hankering, lamenting, happiness and distress. So that concludes the sort of darshanic commentaries of this Brahma Stuti. We can review a little bit the verses and some of the 18 points. Have another couple of days of class, 2 or 3 more days on this Brahma Stuti. And the one note I have in Prabhupada's Krishna book about this, these pastimes, chapter 14, I saw here. After this Leela, Brahma Vimohan Leela, Brahma realized his littleness, and to get the chance of attaining Prema Bhakti, one must take birth and be consecrated by the holy dust of the feet of the Braja Gopas or Gopis. So Brahma's craving for any birth, for a birth in any species in Braj, he also realized the glories of the Braja Gopis and Gopas and cows, who subjugate the Lord by their pure love. According to Sanatana Goswami, Lord Brahma is engaged in the ecstasy of Nam Sankirtan. Brahma, in his prayers, he realizes that Krishna is his supreme principle. The Vilas Murtis that Sri Krishna manifested were all Narayan forms, the Lord of Vaikuntha, and Baladeva of Dwarka. Brahman is Krishna's outward self-effulgent aspect. Lord Sri Krishna manifests Goloka Lila by his inconceivable power of Yoga Maya on the mundane plane known as Gokul. Brahma realized his smallness, and now he understood that to attain Prema Bhakti one must be born and blessed by the holy dust of the feet of the Gopas and Gopis. He also realized the glories of the Brijvasis, who can subjugate the Supreme Lord by their love, which has no comparison. Although born from Lord Narayan, Lord Brahma now understands that Narayan himself is a mere expansion of the original personality of Godhead, Purushottam Sri Krishna. So Brahma had a realization. Brahma and Shiva, they were intelligent. They had a realization that the only way to get Krishna's service in Vrindavan is by the mercy of the Brijvasis. You have to come under their shelter. Even Lakshmi Devi couldn't understand that. She was attached to being a Brahmani and being the wife of Lord Vishnu. Although she's performing intense austerities, Brahmins often do that. And she's very controlled in her eating, but still she can't let go and develop that ego. She's not prepared to develop that ego of a blade of grass in Vrindavan, or develop that ego of having the gopis, dust of the gopis' feet on her head. So she's stuck in Vailvan meditating, in Bilvavan. So it's not an easy realization. She has so much Aishwarya and so much grandeur and such a high position, eternally serving the feet of Lord Narayan. And she's so close to Vrindavan, but she's there, she's living in Vrindavan, but she's far away from the Leela. She's far away from the Leelas of Krishna and the coward boys, or with his mother and father, what to speak of the gopis, which she's aspiring for. Shiva got to enter the pastimes as Gopishvara, and Brahma's got to enter the pastimes as a mountain, Barsana, Radharani walking on him, his desires are filled. But Lakshmi Devi, no one's walking on her, everyone goes and offers respects and gives her some khichdi and posha month. They offer her some special khichdi with dry fruits. which is distributed to all the yatris every Thursday. This is a very special aspect here. So we can go back a little bit and just review these verses kind of in a quick way. I finally got these notes. These are the prayers of review of the prayers of Lord Brahma. The first verse, I want to, if we have those 18 points, I've kind of grouped them together here. My verses, if you want to study. Because we made 18 points in the beginning, so now we're going to go back and fit the 40 verses into those 18 points as much as we can, as much as we understand. The first point, there's 18 points of Siddhanta and Tattva. In these 40 prayers, the Adi Guru, Lord Brahma, the head of our Brahma Sampradaya, he established 18 different points of Vaishnava Tattva, Siddhanta, and Krishna consciousness to conclusively prove that Swayam Bhagavan Sri Krishna in Vrindavan, although appearing as an innocent, tender 5-year-old boy in his Bali Leela, he's actually the topmost form of all forms of Godhead. He's the Supreme Purushottam. Among all the other Purushottam Bhagavans, such as Maryada Purushottam Bhagavan Sri Ram, or Aishwarya Purushottam Bhagavan Lord Narayan, Purushottam Bhagavan Sri Krishna, he's known as Madhurya Purushottam, but he's actually the absolute topmost supreme form of Purushottam Bhagavan. He's Purnatam Bhagavan, Bhagavan Sri Krishna in Vrindavan. After having experiencing this Brahmi Mohan Leela and seeing all these millions of Vilas Murtis and Krishna expanding himself in unlimited numbers of calves and coward boyfriends who look exactly like them for an entire year, Brahma became thoroughly bewildered and he finally realized something of the omnipotence and greatness of Krishna, which he revealed in these 40 prayers, which in essence they explain the Avideya, the Sambandha Avideya and Prayojana of Krishna consciousness. The summary of the chapter by the BBT mentions 18 basic points that are discussed in these by Lord Brahma. And the first point is the incomparable transcendental beauty of Bhagavan Sri Krishna Vrindavan. And that's mentioned, of course, in verse 1, where he says that he's just describing what he's seeing, Krishna standing before him, that he's beautiful. You're the most worshipful Lord. You're so beautiful. Dark blue body like a new cloud, lightning yellow garments, gunji earrings, peacock feather on your head, and wearing forest garlands and leaves, and holding a cowarding stick, a buffalo horn, a flute, and a morsel of food in your hand. In the commentaries of Sridhar Maharaj, he's saying that when Brahma was offering these prayers, he was trembling with fear. Trembling with fear from the offense he had committed. So he says Sri Chaturmukh Brahma, after receiving extreme mercy by Krishna, he's looking directly at Krishna, and he sees Krishna as possessing supremely attractive opulence. This is Sanatana Goswami's commentary. Krishna's possessing supremely attractive opulence of his personal form, qualities, and pastimes. And thus merging in the ras of the highest stage of love of Godhead, Brahma offers prayers by describing first of all that form which he's directly seeing before him. Oftentimes when devotees get sakshat darshan of Krishna at the level of prema or perfection they may attain by the mercy of the Lord, they faint. They're overwhelmed by the immense beauty and sweetness, love of Krishna's darshan, seeing Krishna face to face. They can't contain the ecstasies within their heart and mind and they swoon on that spot. And then Krishna revives them with some sweet words spoken in their ears, or maybe puts his hand on their chest or lifts them up from their swoon. It's described in Durya Kadambini. But somehow Chaturmukh Brahma, with all his intelligence and he is able to keep himself composed, although he's looking directly at Krishna. And he says that He says, Naumidya. He says, you're worshipable. So this phrase, a worshipable one, means you alone are worthy of praise, not me, not Brahma, nor even Vaikunthanath or Lord Narayan, or any of your other incarnations or other expansions. They are not worthy of praise. You alone, Nanda Nandan. Because I see that within you, the Supreme Absolute Truth, the source of all incarnations, you are the actual origin. Therefore, I offer obeisances unto you. So this is the first verse, describes the beautiful, inconceivable beauty of Krishna and Vrindavan. And out of excessive hankering, these prayers of Brahma were spoken with the desired aim expressed in the very beginning. So he's seeing this, he saw so many numerous four-armed forms in chapter 13. Now he decides, actually, they're all expanded from this little two-armed boy, Nanda Nandan. He is actually the supreme goal, not my father Narayan or not Vaikuntha. That is not the goal, to leave Satyaloka, to leave Brahmaloka at the time of cataclysm or pralaya and attain Vaikuntha Mukti, Sarupya Mukti or Sarlokya Mukti. That is not the goal. Dharmat Kam Moksh, Vaikuntha Moksh. Actually, the goal is this little boy with a yogurt in his left hand and the pickles between, tenderly pickles between his fingers and his bare feet running around Vrindavan behind the cows. This, he is the goal. So with this understanding, he offers his prayers. The second point is that Krishna's identity of sweetness is very difficult to comprehend, more than his opulence. The Madhurya of Sri Krishna is more difficult to understand than his Aishwarya, and this is told in verse 2, Brahma. He simply here it says, neither I nor anyone else can estimate the potency of this transcendental body of yours. Well, the body he's seeing, of course, is Madhurya. Purushottam, this sweet body that I'm seeing, I can't estimate it. It's too beautiful. I can't understand your personal form. So how could I possibly understand the happiness you feel within yourself? So this is the inconceivability of the Lord. This is point number two. It's very difficult to understand. Some additional commentaries have manifested. Vishnu's saying that Krishna is replying to his statement here that you're greatest form that's conceivable. And Krishna says, my dear Brahma, you are the master of all the opulences of the universe. I am the son of a cowherd in the forest. You are the oldest person in the creation. I am just a boy. This is Vishnu repeating. You are the supreme learned person on account of your understanding the essential purport of the Vedas and your fixed and perfect behavior. But what do? I run behind the calves and tend the calves, and I have no knowledge. I don't have the slightest understanding of proper behavior prescribed in the Smritis. I'm simply wandering about eating some food in my left hand. You are the master mystic power, the happiest and directly the supreme controller, whereas I have been confused by your maya and I am traveling around the forest experiencing unhappiness in my mind over losing my calves and friends. I am not even fit to offer prayers to you, Brahma. Anticipating such crooked words, Brahma indicates, verily out of ignorance I have committed a great offense. So that's why in verse 2 he says that I can't understand your glories of this body of yours, which embodies your childhood activities and exhibits all your innocence of a 4 or 5-year-old boy. But what to speak of that fact, I cannot understand it. Also, what to speak of your Kaishor Leela, which you are about to exhibit as your greatest masterpiece. And what further to speak of the happiness you experience by engaging in such activities as tending the cows, even though you are already infinitely full of your own ecstasy by the experience within your own mind, Atmasukhana Bhuti, which is in this verse too. And also I cannot understand the glories of the happiness experienced within the mind of even the mind of one of your companions. What to speak of your own happiness? Now verse number three and five, they address point number three. How to understand Sri Krishna's Madhurya, which we've established as difficult, or even Brahma to understand. He can understand it. He says, only by hearing Hari Madhurya Katha from advanced devotees, only by the devotional process of hearing and chanting, transcendental sounds received from proper Vedic authorities. So that's established in verse 3. He says, Gyanam Prayasam. He said, Gyane Prayasam Udapasina Manteva, that by gyan and intellectual pursuit or mental speculation, and one cannot understand. But by, if someone dedicates his life to your narrations, we mentioned that, body, mind, and words, then he can get some understanding. And that same point is mentioned in verse 5, more specifically, where he says that the devotional service perfected by hearing and chanting, one can understand you. Then they can surrender and achieve your abode. That's the way. In verse 4, he says that independent study, you can't do it. It's like trying to get rice out of a husk or sugarcane juice out of a juiced out piece of sugarcane. Once it's all squeezed out and you try to chew on it, you won't get anything. There's chewing and chewed. So this is point number 3. And point 4 is independent study is a futile attempt to understand Sri Krishna's Madhurya. In other words, it's fruitless to try to realize God through processes outside the Vedic authority. Self-made man. And that verse is there. That's verse number 4. That's about the husk thing. That's the husk is verse 4. 3 and 5 is you understand by hearing and chanting and surrendering and achieve the Lord. Point 5 is that the personality of Krishna is a great mystery. That's discussed in verse 6 and 7. Brahma says, someone may realize your impersonal aspect after lots of mind and sense purification. But still, that's all to understand is your Nirvishesh Brahman aspect. Savishesh Brahman is very difficult, Brahman with qualities. So that's 6 and 7 establish that point, that personality of God is a great mystery. And verse 70, and then he makes an analogy how difficult it is. If one really controls his mind and senses in verse 6, he may be able to realize the impersonal aspect, Nirvishesh Brahman. But then in verse 7 he explains how more difficult it is by saying, all right, you have very powerful intelligence, you're a great scientist. Okay, count all the atoms on the earth, count all the snow particles of snow, and all the stars in the sky, and you can be the most learned man with an IQ of 350 or 400 or whatever. But still, you won't be able to count the unlimited qualities of the form, the personal form of God. Now the sixth point is Bhagavan Kripa. Only by the mercy of God can we understand His glories. And that's told in verse number 8. In one sense, we have to tolerate, that's Tateno Kampam Shishimikshimano. You tolerate, keep serving Krishna, and He's pleased with your tolerance and your continuous service, Ridvagvapaburavitadannamaste, then He gives you. He gives Himself, He gives us. Dayabak, you inherit Muktipada, you get Krishna and go to Krishna's land. So that's by His mercy. He gives Himself that inheritance. Point number 7 is realization of one's own insignificance and foolishness, self-condemnation, repentance, and begging forgiveness. This is verse 9 and 10. Here, Brahma, these are His true confessions. I'm uncivilized, I'm impudent, I try to cover you. What a fool I am. Compared to you, I'm like a spark in a fire. That's verse 9. And then 10, he says, please excuse my offenses. I'm like a child. I'm foolish. My eyes are blinded by ignorance. I thought I was a big creator, but actually I'm simply your servant. I beg for your compassion. Now the eighth point is the Achintya Vibhuti of Krishna. Lord Brahma glorifies the inconceivable opulence of Lord Krishna in eight verses, verse 11 through 18. And those verses there, he's saying that I'm in charge of this one universe, one pot-like universe, but what about you? That's me. Oh, I have this big universe, this Jagananda, shaped like a pot or like an egg-shaped. But you, your little five-year-old body, millions of unlimited universes are passing through the pores of your body, like particles of dust pass through the screen, holes in a window screen. And then he's saying, please, I'm so stupid. Nothing is outside of your abdomen. Everything's in your abdomen. And I'm like, I'm also in your abdomen, like your child. You're like my mother, so please don't take offense. As a mother forgives her, when the child kicks her, she forgives him. And then he goes on to say that one partial aspect of you, Narayan, you lie down in the water and I'm born from a lotus flower. So here he's, in these verses, he's glorifying the opulence of Krishna, the Aishwarya of Krishna, about Narayan. And it goes on like this, and then, I'm searching for you, I couldn't find you, only by your mercy. And finally, point number 9 of the 18 points. This is verse 19, and Brahma describes the difference between Brahma, Shiva, and Lord Vishnu, and establishes who's supreme by saying that they're all different aspects of Krishna. This is verse number 19. Someone who's ignorant of your transcendental position, Krishna, you appear by your inconceivable energy. To create, you appear as Brahma, who is me. To maintain, you appear as Vishnu. And to annihilate, you appear as Shiva. So in relation to Krishna, all these are just aspects or amshas of him, of Krishna, Purushottam Krishna, for particular functions. So in point number 10 of the revelations or illuminations of Brahma, that's given in verse 20, where he talks about the avatars, Sri Krishna's avatars, the cause of Krishna's descents. In verse number three, which was point how to understand Krishna's Madhurya only by hearing and chanting. There's one translation. This is that famous verse, Jnane Prayasam Urupasyanamanta Eva. And one translation is given, my dear Lord Krishna, those devotees who have thrown away the impersonal conception of the Absolute Truth, Jnane Prayasam Urupasyanamanta Eva, and therefore abandon discussing empiric philosophical truths, should hear from self-realized devotees about your holy name, form, qualities, and pastimes. Such devotees who are hearing from these devotees about Krishna Nam Rup Gun Leela, they should completely follow the principles of devotional service and remain free from illicit sex and free from gambling and free from intoxication and animal slaughter. Such devotees surrender themselves fully to you with their body, words, and mind. Then they can live in any ashram or social status. Indeed, you are conquered by such persons, although you are always unconquerable. So that's a nice translation of verse 3 of Brahma's prayers. I'll go on with this outline of 18 points. I just mentioned verse 20 and saying that this establishes the cause of Krishna's descents. And this verse, Brahma is saying, Krishna, you have no material birth. Yet to defeat the false pride of faithless demons, you take birth among demigods, sages, human beings, animals, and even aquatics. So as you know, these listing these various, among the demigods, Krishna appeared as Vamanadeva, among Bali, among the human beings he came as Ram and Balaram, and the sages he came as Parasaram, and animals and aquatics he came as Korma and Mina and the Sringadeva, etc. So these are describing Krishna's descents. Verse 21 describes point number 11, which is Krishna's Nityalila. Lord Brahma describes the eternal nature of Krishna's pastimes versus the temporality of the material world. This is point 11, which is discussed in verse 21. Your pastimes take place continuously in these three worlds. No one can understand the mystery of how Yogamaya acts. Now, point 12 is mukti is attained by Bhagavat Tattva Gyan. The conditioned souls can attain liberation from the cycle of birth and death by understanding the truth of Bhagavan Sri Krishna. This is described in three verses, verse 22, 3, and 4. So he's saying that this universe is like a dream. It appears real and it covers one's consciousness, but it's not real. And when you receive clear knowledge from the spiritual master, one can understand the original personality of Krishna and become free. And then point 13 is liberation and bondage. This is a very interesting point. Liberation and bondage are both illusions in the ultimate sense. In actuality, in these three prayers, this is point 13, in these three prayers, 25, or rather 4, verse 25 through 28, in actuality, Lord Brahma proves that both bondage and liberation are unreal. It is only the living entity's conditioned outlook by which he produces his bondage or liberation. And that's described there very nicely, mistaking a rope for a snake and a snake for a rope and those whole things. And then, this is a review. And then the 14th point is he establishes a conclusion again in verse 29 and 30. Again he establishes mercy, mercy, mercy. Kripa karo, kripa karo. Only if we get the mercy of the Lord can we understand Bhagavan Sri Krishna. Simply, there's no other way to understand the truth of the personality of Godhead without Bhagavan Kripa. That's verse 29 and 30, point 14. Atapite deva padambuja dvaya prasadaleshanu grihita evahi janati tattvam Bhagavan Mahimno Machanya Eko Pi Charam Vichinvan. O my Lord Purushottam Sri Krishna, if one is favored by even a slight trace of the mercy of your lotus feet, Ambuja, Ambudwa, Prasadalesha, Anugraha, favor, mercy, compassion, Anugraha, Lesha Prasad, just a touch of prasad. If that happens, then such a fortunate recipient can understand the greatness of your personality. Bhagavan janati tattvam Bhagavan mahimno Bhagavat mahima. Like we say, Mathura Mahatmyam or Radhakund Mahima Madhuri. The sweet glories of Radhakund. So this Bhagavan mahimno means maha, mahim. Means the greatness, the great glories of Bhagavan. Janati tattvam. One can know the truth. Tattva darshan. By the mercy of the Lord. That's verse 29. And verse 30 again mentions that I pray that I'm so fortunate that I can take birth and be counted among your devotees, and then I can engage in devotional service to your lotus feet, which is the only way. Bhakti mama vijananti yavanyash chasmi tattvataha. Now, in these point number 15, Brahma glorifies the unlimited fortune of the Brijvasis because they've attained the association and service and love of Purushottam Bhagavan Sri Krishna. So he's analyzing that Because he's saying in point 14 that the conclusion again is only by the mercy of Krishna can you get his service and association and understand him. And the Vrishabhasis, they got the mercy. They have the full mercy. So if one wants to get to understand Bhagavan and associate with him and serve him eternally in love, then he must get the mercy like the Vrishabhasis. He must get the mercy of the Vrishabhasis. So therefore he's glorifying the unlimited fortune of the Vrishabhasis. In verse 31, 32, and 33. Very beautiful verses. Look how fortunate are these Vrishabhasi ladies who fed their breast milk to you for 1 year when you became their sons, or the cows who fed you when you became their calves, Vatsa. All the Vedic sacrifices for millions of years have not given you a drop of such satisfaction. And look at Nanda Maharaj, your own father, and the other coward men. There's no limit to their good fortune, because you're their son. And what about the coward boys? You're their friend. The Param Brahman has become a Sakha, as a friend of the Vrishabhasi coward boys, the Sakhas and Gwals. That's 32. Then 33. And what is our fortune as Vrishabhasis? We only can have some experience by relishing your sweetness through the senses of the Vrishabhasis. We're so far removed. But that's our good fortune, we have some connection. Then point 16 is the Prarthana, Brahma's Prarthana and Sankalpa. Lord Brahma's personal prayer is to attain any birth in Vrindavan. Even as grass, bush, or creepers, like Uddhava prayed in chapter 47 at the end of Brahma Gita. So here he said, Tadburi bhagyam, yad janma kimap yatavyam, yad go kalepi katamangri rajopi shekam, yaj jivitam tu nikilam bhagavan mukundas, tvadyapi yat para raja shruti mrigyam eva. This is verse 34, he's praying. My greatest possible good fortune would be somehow to take any birth whatsoever in the forest of Gokul and have my head bathed by the dust falling from the lotus feet of any of its residents. So this is his prayer and his sankalpa, his vow, his affirmed desire. Their entire life and soul, the Vrishabhasis, is Mukunda, the dust of whose feet is still being searched for by the Vedic mantras. Point 17 is the Brahma glorifies the homes of the Vrishabhasis, that they're not ordinary grihas, they're actually lilastalis of Purushottam Sri Krishna. They're not prison houses like ordinary houses of materialistic married people. Vrishabhasis' homes are places of Krishna's transcendental sweet pastimes. This is in verse 35 to 37. And Putana came to your house to kill you and you liberated her. But the houses of materialists are like prisons. Then that's point 17. The last point is 18th point, final point is Sri Krishna Purna Sharanagati. This is verses 38 through 41 where Brahma fully surrenders to the lotus feet of the child, Bhagavan Sri Krishna in Braj, a 5-year-old child, Balya, Kumara Vihara, Kumara Krishna. Conclusion of all Lord Brahma's experiences in Braj after Brahma Vimohan Leela in chapter 13 where he stole the boys and calves. Then he saw Krishna's Vishnumaya, etc. And Lord Brahma falls at the feet of this Gopal in full submission and offers his complete self, offering his whole self at the lotus feet of the Lord, Purushottam Sri Krishna Vrindavan, praising him again and again, circumambulating 3 times the Lord, offering dandavats at his feet, and taking his permission to leave, return to his position as the maintainer, let's say the controller, let's say builder, creator of the universe. So that's the summary of the verses and the 18 points in the Brahma Stuti. Tomorrow we'll read some, again, we'll read actually the pastime. It's kind of going back around, but we'll read the past, since there is time, we didn't know there would be. We'll actually read the pastime, Brahma, Bhima, and Leela, from some supplementary books like Gopal Champu and Garga Samhita and Ananda Vrindavan Champu, just to relish some of the sweet outlook of these great acharyas into the pastimes. And that will conclude our classes of tomorrow, maybe tomorrow. And we'll also discuss about the Anartha, the Brahma Vimohan Leela. Of course, this class is Brahma Stuti. There's no real Anartha there. It's all teachings in Siddhanta. But in the Anarthas to Braja Bhajan, Brahma Vimohan Leela also represents one. So we'll discuss that in the next couple of days. Srimad Bhagavatam Aki.